Welcome to the Press On Podcast. In this episode, we'll hear from Wendy Johnson on the cultural context of biblical genealogies.
Genealogies, boring lists of names or interesting nuggets of narrative? Why should we be excited about coming across them in the biblical text? In this three-part series, I hope to stimulate your interest by taking a closer look at genealogies in the Bible, highlighting the ways in which they differ from our modern expectations of the genre. By understanding the cultural formulation and uses of ancient genealogies, we will better understand their meaning and purpose in the biblical text, as well as whether they have any significance for the new family of God in Jesus. A genealogy is a chronological list of generations of people who are blood relatives, who are related to each other. While lists of biologically unrelated people, such as the Mesopotamian king lists, occur in the ancient Near Eastern sources, genealogies are relatively uncommon. However, they are an important genre in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, conveying information in a compact format that serves several purposes. Obviously, the primary purpose of genealogies is to document familial relationships across generations. Biblical genealogies are not those of random groups of people. Rather, they serve to delineate those people in the ancient Near East who were in covenant relationship with Yahweh. Thus, they are also about identity. Who I am in the context of my family, clan, tribe, and nation. And also, whether I am under the blessing of Yahweh. When Abram left Mesopotamia, he left not only a place, a land, but also the gods who protected that land. He entered into a covenant relationship with a new God, Yahweh, and this gave him and his descendants a new identity. Israelites, therefore, rooted their identity in Abraham, their important ancestor, whose honor is ascribed to all his descendants. Ancient Near Eastern culture was patriarchal, and inheritance was predominantly patrilineal through males. Genealogies thus emphasized the importance of the firstborn male, and successive generations were listed according to the named firstborn, while the phrase other sons and daughters encompassed the unnamed progeny. The genealogy of Adam in Genesis 5 is a good example of this. Women sometimes occur in genealogies as wives in order to clarify the hierarchy and relationships of multiple children of polygamous relationships. But they usually have no inheritance rights or lineage importance themselves. Genealogies may also serve as shorthand history. A list of successive generations summarizes the passage of time without having to give too much detail of that which is unimportant to the narrative. Thus, the genealogies help to bridge between important events, such as creation and the flood, or the flood and the Tower of Babel. Most significantly for their role in the Hebrew Bible is the purpose that genealogies serve as evidence of the fulfillment of God's creation blessing in Genesis 1:28. Be fruitful and multiply. Thus, genealogies show the fruitfulness of Adam's line, of Noah's line, of Abram's line, down through the generations of those who came from their loins. This fruitfulness was a gift from their god Yahweh, in contrast to the ancient Near Eastern belief held by their polytheistic neighbors. They believed that the gods regarded humans as noisy, that they overpopulated the earth, and that something needed to be done about reducing their numbers. This ancient Near Eastern belief thus held that the flood was the means for doing so. Instead, Yahweh blessed his people with fruitfulness. The genealogies not only show fruitfulness and multiplying life. As people multiply, so does wickedness and sin. And so mortality persists as well. A common refrain of the genealogies is, "And he died," as for example in Genesis 5 verse 5. Genealogies summarize the ongoing tension between fruitfulness and mortality. Genealogies in the Hebrew Bible occur predominantly in a few clusters: Genesis, Chronicles, and Ezra-Nehemiah. Others are scattered elsewhere in the text, and in the New Testament, we have only the two genealogies of Jesus in Matthew and Luke, which we will consider in the third article. Right at the beginning of the Bible, genealogies in Genesis have an important place. The ancient editor of the text has used them to give intentional structure to the narrative, anchoring the early history of Israel in its patriarchs, those called into relationship with Yahweh. The so-called Toledot formula of the genealogies is important to be aware of when studying Genesis. Later, the genealogies of Chronicles and Ezra-Nehemiah, compiled in the exilic and post-exilic eras, served to remind Yahweh's exiled people of covenant history all the way back to Adam, the first to be called out by God. This would give them hope in difficult circumstances. The genealogies were also important for proving lineage in order to claim land, as well as the right to priestly roles and royal status as people returned from exile. However, genealogies are minimally represented in the monarchical period as narrated in Samuel Kings. Here, the focus was on a united nation, especially under David and Solomon. But the undercurrents of tribal loyalty remain a vital element of political machinations. We see evidence of tribal alliances and of the kinship ties that bind them throughout the narrative. Genealogies are structured in two ways: linear and segmented. We will discuss the linear form briefly first. The linear form is well recognized as a long list of father to son descendants in a vertical manner. And an example of this is seen in Genesis 5 in the genealogy of Adam. Thus, firstborn sons are listed and linked in order to grant lineage and inheritance rights. And important ancestors or descendants are highlighted. This linear form also encapsulates an abbreviated account of history, as we've already noted. The Genesis 5 genealogy links creation to the flood without much narrative detail in the vertical list of generations. Another example is the genealogy in Ruth 4, verses 18 to 22. Here, the father-son line from Perez to David clarifies that the important person in the genealogy is the descendant, David, the great king of Israel, from whom Naomi's family is ascribed honor. Segmented genealogies have both a vertical linear component as well as a horizontal branching component. They therefore list fewer generations, but give more detail of the individuals in each generation. This is the form of genealogy in which we see women named. In the polygamous relationships of the ancient Near East, the hierarchical importance of sons is indicated by the marital status of their mothers. Let us look at the example of the genealogy of the sons of Jacob in Genesis 35, verses 23 to 26. This shows the sons listed by mother and not by birth order. The married wives in order, Leah, then Rachel, and then the concubines in the order in which the narrative says that they were given to Jacob and bore him sons, Bilhah, then Zilpah. In our cultural context, we are usually more interested in genealogies that are segmented, since we want to include as many known relationships as possible. But this was not the purpose or function of genealogies in the ancient Near East. Thus, even though there is more generational detail, it is still not complete. For example, daughters are not included, nor are the children necessarily listed in order of age, but rather in order of hierarchical importance, or for some other reason which is sometimes indicated by the context, but not always. Moving on, the order of genealogies can either be ascending or descending. In an ascending order, the person of interest to the author is linked back to an important ancestor. We see this, for example, in the genealogy of Mordecai in Esther 2, verses 5 to 6, that we will discuss shortly. Many of the genealogies in Genesis are examples of a descending order, where the important ancestor is named first, and then his descendants are listed afterwards. Note the genealogies of Adam in Genesis 5 and of Cain in Genesis 4 as examples of this form. Sometimes the significant person in the genealogy is the descendant, to whom the list ascends in a manner of speaking, and from whom honor is ascribed to his ancestors. This occurs, for example, in the genealogy of David in Ruth 4, verses 18 to 22. David, as the most important descendant of Judah, occurs at the end of the list and is more important than any of his named ancestors. In the 17th century, Bishop Usher tried to find the sum total of the genealogical years in the Bible In order to calculate when events such as the creation of Adam and the flood occurred. We know now that these dates don't correspond with data from the geological and archaeological records. Comparative studies of ancient Near Eastern records have also shown us that ancient genealogies were not meant to be historically and chronologically accurate according to our modern standards. We want an ordered, sequential, and complete list of biologically related individuals. But ancient genealogies were more interested in highlighting important individuals and their significant relationships. Thus, ancient genealogies include the features of telescoping and fluidity. First, telescoping is the omission of one or more generations, usually without any indication in the text. Unless we have another record with which to compare, we may never know that it has actually occurred. There are several reasons for telescoping to have occurred. One of these is that genealogies were a way, as we have already said, of summarizing history, while highlighting important events and individuals. Generations that the author regarded as insignificant to his purpose may thus have been omitted. We also know that numbers had significance and symbolism for the Israelite people. So another reason for telescoping was to reduce the number of generations in the genealogy to a significant number, or to assign a significant individual to an important numbered generation. As an example, the number 7 symbolizes wholeness and perfection. And we note that in Genesis chapters 4 and 5, Enoch is marked as the 7th generation from Adam, and Lamech as the 7th from Cain. In this way, they are both highlighted as important individuals. As another example, in 1 Chronicles 2, verses 13 to 15, the chronicler telescopes the genealogy of the line of Judah so that David is listed as the 7th son. Although the older record in 1 Samuel 16, verses 10 to 13, indicated that he was actually the 8th son. The chronicler wished to highlight the importance of David and the Davidic kingship in his narrative, and so here he manipulates the genealogy to his purpose. A New Testament example of this is in Matthew's genealogy at the beginning of his gospel. Comparing Matthew's genealogy to the text of 2 Chronicles reveals that Matthew omitted several kings. 3 in verse 8, 4 between Josiah and Jeconiah in verse 11, and Zedekiah is omitted after Jeconiah in favor of Jeconiah's line. Matthew did this in order to have 3 times 14 generations in his genealogy. The numerical value of the name David in Hebrew is 14. The number 14 is also equal to 2 times 7, with 7 being a symbolic number, as we have already noted. Other significant numbers include 10, 12, and 70. Thus, we see the 10 generations listed in the genealogy of David in Ruth, or the 70 names symbolizing totality listed in the so-called Table of Nations in Genesis 10. The symbolism achieved by numbers was often more important than completeness in details of a genealogy. Second, fluidity is the flexibility used by an ancient author or editor when choosing names to use in his genealogies. There can be either addition or deletion, telescoping of names, as well as changes in the placement of names to achieve the desired significant number of generations and or the narrative purposes of the genealogy. While scribal error cannot be excluded as a cause of apparent fluidity, there were several reasons for deliberate manipulation of genealogies other than the ones discussed previously under telescoping. First, the ancient author or editor of biblical texts may have regarded some individuals as more important, and these were often placed at the beginning or the end of the list, with the generations between being of lesser importance for his purpose. When genealogies were repurposed, as for example when the chronicler reused the Genesis genealogies, the relative importance of individuals may have changed, whether politically, socially, or theologically. And the genealogical list was then adapted to suit the new narrative purpose. We have seen this already with regard to the placement of David in his genealogical line. Second, the relationship of individuals to each other may have been changed by legal recourse to adoption or levirate marriage, and this may have resulted in inclusion or exclusion, or a change in relationship as indicated in the genealogy. An example of this may be that of Zerubbabel. He is listed as the son of Shealtiel in Ezra, Nehemiah, and Haggai, but 1 Chronicles 3:17-19 claims that his father was Shealtiel's brother, Padiah. Was there a change in relationship, perhaps due to death and adoption, such that Padiah's name is substituted for Shealtiel's? We cannot be sure, but it is a possibility. Finally, fluidity may sometimes reflect the suppression of a particular line. This may be seen with the priestly line of Eli through Abiathar, which needs to be reconstructed from the narrative in 1 Samuel. We won't examine this now, but I encourage some sleuthing if you're interested. Besides the significant clusters of genealogies seen in Genesis and Chronicles, genealogies may be inserted into a text for a particular reason. And it's important to consider this when studying a passage. We'll look at two examples. The first example is that of the genealogy of Mordecai, which is inserted into the text in Esther 2, verse 5. This short genealogy lists Mordecai as the son of Jer, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjaminite. It notes that Kish was exiled with King Jeconiah of Judah by Nebuchadnezzar. The most obvious purpose of this genealogy is to show the credentials of Mordecai, and therefore of Esther, the main protagonist in this narrative. However, there is another purpose as well. While Mordecai's lineage is shown by this genealogy, we are also meant to infer historical information that will become pertinent to the story and to Mordecai's character as it unfolds. The use of the name Kish the Benjaminite is probably a deliberate allusion to Saul, the first king of Israel, whose father's name was Kish of Benjamin. Saul had taken captive the Amalekite king Agag, and his failure to kill him was displeasing to Samuel and cost Saul the kingship. 1 Samuel 15, 26-33. Mordecai's enemy, the Jews' enemy, is Haman the Agagite, whom Mordecai, through Esther's intercession with the king, successfully eliminates. Thus, this genealogy alludes to historical events which have a bearing on the current story. In this later narrative of Kish and Agag, Mordecai, unlike his ancestor Saul, is now the hero who does the will of God by freeing his people from oppression. The second example is the genealogy that occurs in Exodus chapter 6. This genealogy starts out as one would expect from a genealogy of the 12 tribes, with short genealogies of Reuben and Simeon. Next is a significantly amplified genealogy of Levi, followed by no further listing of tribes. The purpose of this genealogy is indicated by the inclusio created by verses 10 to 13 and 26 to 30, in which Moses asks Yahweh why Pharaoh should listen to him. In response, his ancestral lineage is detailed in the text. The purpose for the inclusion of this genealogy is therefore to establish the power and authority that Moses and Aaron had in speaking to Pharaoh as Yahweh's representatives, the representatives of the people with whom Yahweh was in covenant relationship. We can see from these examples that genealogies are not randomly inserted into the text, but have a purpose linked to the surrounding narrative. Finding the purpose can enrich our understanding of the biblical passage and enhance our study. In summary, in this article, I have noted that some important purposes of biblical genealogies are to record the blood relationships and lineage of the people of Israel among the people of the ancient Near East, to emphasize their identity as people in covenant relationship to their God Yahweh, to summarize covenant history, to identify relationships in order to authorize claims to lands and roles, such as priestly and royal ones, especially for those returning to the land after the exile. And I have emphasized their role in giving evidence of God's blessing to be fruitful and multiply in Genesis 1, verse 28, while also being evidence of ongoing mortality. We have looked at the form, structure, and selectivity of biblical genealogies, noting especially how the ancient authors and editors used these elements for particular purposes that were different than the expectations we have for accuracy and detail of genealogies in our modern age. Thus, by understanding the cultural context of the genealogies of the Bible, we will gain valuable insights when studying them.
Thanks for joining us on the Press On podcast. You've been listening to Wendy Johnson. For more, you can visit pressonjournal.org.